The book was about, how our planet is warming, and one of the surefire consequences of that warming is that the ice caps are melting, and as they melt, the ocean is rising, and that's sort of one of the most sort of significant facts of our time. It's not hypothetical. It's already happening. It's going to continue to accelerate for several hundred years, no matter what we do with carbon emissions, carbon dioxide burning. So the book kind of explores the consequences of that. In a lot of places, like Miami, like Norfolk, like the Marshall Islands in the Pacific, places in Africa that I visited, this is a thing that's happening in real time right now. And the consequences for these cities and these places is enormous, both from a kind of social and cultural point of view, but also from a economic point of view. It's going to have a big impact on real estate values, especially in places like Miami, which are really driven by real estate values.
So you also go into a little bit how just some of the models that we've been working with, even just very recently, for example, the model that led to that provided the background information for the 2015 Paris Agreement, how even those models are behind the science, and that the science is pointing to even worse outcomes. And do you think that, from your viewpoint, do you think that global leaders are capable of taking these rapid changes into account in their decision making?
Well, that's the big question. And certainly, we haven't seen much evidence of that yet. It's certainly true that the science, the IPCC reports, which are the sort of gold standards, that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the kind of gold standard for climate science, which did underpin the Paris Agreement in 2015, is really on the conservative side, and that a lot of the more recent science since then has shown a lot of these impacts beginning to accelerate. The scenarios and the models for the future are the consequences, the risks are getting higher, not lower. And we can see that kind of playing out in real time with, these weather disasters that we've been having, the wildfires, the increasingly intense hurricanes, the sea level rise, all these things. It's beginning to happen, and see this in real time. You know, and whether politicians are up to it, I wish I could say that I think that they are, and certainly some places are thinking more seriously about this than others, but I don't think that anybody has really, kind of bent their mind around what the real implications of this are and how we need to, rethink the way we live in order to deal with this. And I should say that I don't think it's entirely kind of bad news. I think that this is going to kind of spark a real era of kind of creativity and rethinking about how we live and where we live that is going to be pretty exciting.
Last month, you completed a story for Rolling Stone about the effect that Hurricane Maria has had on Puerto Rico, and you described it as, quote, a man-made catastrophe created by an explosive mix of politics, Wall Street corruption, poor planning, and rising carbon pollution. How do those factors interact?
Well, I mean, it's been long, scientists have long understood that climate change certainly doesn't cause hurricanes. We know that. I mean, hurricanes have been happening as long as there's been, planet Earth. They've been a part of the climate system. But what we do know is that as the oceans heat up and as the atmosphere heats up, the storms are growing more and more intense, and that they carry more water. We've certainly seen that with Hurricane Harvey in Houston and with Hurricane Florence just recently in North Carolina. And so what happened in Puerto Rico, you had a monster storm that swept through there. And, the governor himself talked to me about this. Governor Rosello is a former scientist. He has a degree in biochemistry from MIT before he got into politics. And, he talked about how climate change is sort of ramping up the intensity of these storms. In Puerto Rico, because of its poor infrastructure, because of a lot of factors that I talk about in the piece, was more vulnerable than it should have been. the reason that these that hurricanes and other big events like this are so damaging and the risks are so high is because of the way we build sort of in harm's way. And that goes not just for hurricanes, but also for things like wildfires. You know, part of the reason that wildfires are having such a much bigger impact in the world now is because we've been building into these sort of wildfire interface zones where the risk of fire is higher and higher. And as our planet heats up and the forests dry out and become more vulnerable to forest fire, you know, we have this sort of very potent mix of, development and climate risks that we're really starting to see in places like that now.
It seems that you write a lot about the unwillingness of people with money and power to do something about this climate process that will probably first and foremost affect people without money or power. It's a big question, but how do you think those people can be reached, or how do you think that connection can be made?
That is a very big question. And I don't quite know what the answer to that is. I mean, it's no question, there's no doubt that, climate change is something that is essentially being caused by the consumption habits of the sort of rich Westerners. By that, I mean the US and Europeans, and increasingly as China and India grow more prosperous, them also. And, the effects are being suffered most powerfully by people in the undeveloped world, people who are living in vulnerable places, who don't have the money and the means to easily move out of high-risk areas. So this sort of the social justice aspect of this question is very powerful, and of this problem, I mean, is very powerful, and at the heart of why it's so difficult to deal with. I mean, it's at the heart of the it was at the heart of the Paris climate negotiations. It's at the heart of every international agreement, where the basic question that the developing world is saying to the West is that, you owe us, you need to help us, you have caused this problem, and we're suffering for it. And, what are you going to do about that? And that's, the sort of central schism in this whole debate about climate change. It's one that's really tough to get around.
You wrote a supplemental article for Rolling Stone about your conversation with the governor of Puerto Rico. He mentioned some of the political realities of dealing with the Trump administration and how often flattery is necessary just to keep the money spigot open. Do you see any hope in the Trump administration for taking serious action to help mitigate some of these future problems?
No, I don't. I mean, I see if anything, getting worse. Everything from undermining vehicle emission standards to, rolling back the Clean Power Plan. Just yesterday, the New York Times reported that they're now gutting the mercury rules that limit mercury emissions from coal plants, which doesn't have to do with climate change, but is indicative of this sort of, larger push to let kind of the fossil fuel industry have its way. I don't see that changing without, maybe after the midterms, and we if the Democrats get more control in Congress and can kind of offer some oversight to some of this. And, I don't think this is necessarily should be or traditionally even has been a partisan issue. Republicans are responsible for some of the best environmental legislation in our country's history, including the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. So traditionally, this is, protecting our world is not a partisan issue, but it certainly has become that now. And I see no indication from the administration, the Trump administration now, that they're moving anywhere near any kind of compromise or any kind of deals to help, deal with the risks that we're plunging into with climate change. I think it's going to take, an election.
All right. And Mr. Goodell, you're going to be here in Portland on the 4th, coming up. You'll be talking at Revolution Hall. And what can folks expect if they go out to that talk?
Well, I would just I'd like to talk to them about my recent book, The Water Will Come, about writing about environmental and climate policy for Rolling Stone for the last 15 years, some of the things that I've seen, some of my thoughts about where we're headed in the future, and just a sort of frank conversation about where we are in the world right now.
I've been speaking with Jeff Goodell, longtime environmental journalist, writer for Rolling Stone, author of The Water Will Come. You will be in Portland on October 4th at Revolution Hall. Thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to talk.
For KBOO Portland, I'm Sam Bowman.